Our founders, Ken and Mary, take us on a journey through the 12 steps. Part 1, in progress.
Please rename yourself. If you wish to change the name displayed in your video box, click on the 3 menu dots in the upper right-hand corner of your video box and click on Rename. We encourage you to use your first name and last initial and where you're located, where you're joining us from. The chat box will be open to ask questions of Ken and Mary or if you have technical issues. Participants will only be allowed to chat with the hosts. Questions will be answered as time allows. To avoid crosstalk, all chat between the participants will be closed. If you're moving about or eating, please turn off your video to avoid distracting others. And lastly, please take an opportunity to check out the information available at these sites. These sites will also be displayed on the screen during breaks and lunch. So if we move to the next slide too quickly for you now, remember you will see them again during those breaks. Our Coded Tucson website is www.codedtucson.org. Our Tucson email, codedtucson@gmail.com. Arizona Facebook, www.facebook.com/CODAArizona. And Arizona website, www.azcoda.org. So, let's start the program. I have asked Emma to read the CODA preamble. And please tell us where you're from.
Hi, I'm Emma, and I'm codependent. I'm from England, Bristol. Okay, the preamble. Codependence Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women whose common purpose is to develop healthy relationships. The only requirement for membership is a desire for healthy and loving relationships. We gather together to support and share with each other in a journey of self-discovery.
Annie?
Learning to love the self. Living the program allows each of us to become increasingly honest with ourselves about our personal histories and our own codependent behaviors. We rely upon the 12 steps and 12 traditions for knowledge and wisdom. These are the principles of our program and guides to developing honest and fulfilling relationships with ourselves and others. In CODA, we each learn to build a bridge to a higher power of our own understanding, and we allow others the same privilege. This renewal process is a gift of healing for us. By actively working the program of Codependence Anonymous, we can each realize a new joy, acceptance, and serenity in our lives.
Thank you, Emma. I have asked Linda and Richard to read the welcome of Codependence Anonymous.
Hi, I'm Linda, I'm codependent from London. I'm Italian. We welcome you to Codependence Anonymous, a program of recovery from codependence, where each of us may share our experience, strength, and hope in our efforts to find freedom where there has been bondage and peace where there has been turmoil in our relationships with others and ourselves. Most of us have been searching for ways to overcome the dilemmas of the conflicts in our relationships and our childhoods. Many of us were raised in families where addiction exists. Some of us were not. In either case, we have found in each of our lives that codependence is a most deeply rooted compulsive behavior and therefore out of our sometimes moderately, sometimes extremely dysfunctional families and other systems. We have each experienced in our own ways the painful trauma of the emptiness of our childhood and relationships throughout our lives. We attempted to use others, our mates, friends, and even our children as our sole source of identity, value, and well-being, and as a way of trying to restore within us the emotional losses from our childhoods. Our histories may include other powerful addictions, which at times we have used to cope with our codependence. We have all learned to survive life, but in CODA we are learning to live life. Through applying the 12 steps and principles found in CODA to our daily life and relationships, both present and past, we can experience a new freedom from our self-defeating lifestyles. It is an individual growth process Each of us is going at our own pace and will continue to do so as we remain open to God's will for us on a daily basis. Our sharing is our way of identification and help us to free the emotional bonds of our past and the compulsive control of our present. No matter how traumatic your past or despairing your present may seem, there is hope for a new day in the program of Codependence Anonymous. No longer do you need to rely on others as a power greater than yourself. May you instead find here a new strength within to be that which God intended, precious and free.
Thank you, Linda and Richard. I have asked Cynthia to read the 12 steps for us.
I'm Cynthia Codependent from Oregon. Can you hear me?
Hi, I'm Cynthia from Oregon. Codependent, can you hear me? One, we admitted we were powerless over others, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other codependents and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Cynthia Codependent from Oregon.
Thank you, Cynthia.
Thanks, Cynthia.
And I have asked Stephanie to read the 12 traditions for us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie from Pace, Florida, grateful recovering codependent, and I'm so excited to be here. The 12 traditions of Codependence Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon CODA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving higher power as expressed to our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for membership in the CODA is a desire for healthy and loving relationships. Four, each group should remain autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or CODA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to other codependents who still suffer. Six, a CODA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the CODA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Seven, a CODA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Codependence Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, CODA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, CODA has no opinion on outside issues, hence the CODA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
I would now like to introduce our presenters for today, Ken and Mary. As I think about their stories in the Blue Book, they read like, "Can this marriage be saved? Even, can this person be saved? By higher power, yes, they can. They surrendered, they did the work, blazed the trail, and then shared it, creating this beautiful program inspired by AA. If you've ever thought about giving up, just watch what happens when you don't. No person is irrevocably broken. Read their stories in the Blue Book, Codependence Anonymous. They're in there. And let's take the 12 steps together with the founders of Codependence Anonymous, Ken and Mary.
Hello. Thank you, Tammy. Thank you so much. My name is Ken, and good morning, or actually afternoon or evening, whatever the case may be, wherever you are. I am a grateful recovering codependent, and I'm really excited about our work today and our sharing. It is a brief journey through the 12 steps, and as there was some conversation earlier, I've been doing this a long time, many years, and I'm still working the steps. So the steps are, for me, the simplest way to continue to move forward, to grow, to change, and to evolve, and I hope that I never stop. So.
And I'm Mary, and I am also a grateful recovering codependent, and I'm so excited about this workshop. It's really been fun working with all of you from Tucson. So we just wanted to kind of a shout out to Sarah and Alicia and Tammy and Lisa and John, and thank you so much for all the work and your service to this program and everybody who's on this presentation. Absolutely. So thank you.
We're just kind of a quick brief outline of what we're going to do. We're going to, Mary and I are going to alternate going back and forth, sharing about the steps, and we will, as we approach each step, we'll share a brief excerpt from the CODA book, and then we'll share our experience, strength, and hope in relationship to that step, and then we'll try to keep at least a little bit of time at the end of each share for one, maybe two questions. So Mary's going to start us off with sharing on the first step.
Okay. Bye-bye. So I wanted to read just a little bit just to get started here from the CODA Blue book. These are going to be a few excerpts that are there from our first step. To understand the growing devastation of our powerlessness and unmanageability, we must explore our past and how we arrived at this point. This step helps us to identify our lifetime of experiences, feelings, and behaviors, to pinpoint how we avoid, control, and manipulate ourselves, other people, and circumstances. We learn how we become our own higher power or placed others in that role. We begin to see that God has not given us the right to control another person's behavior, but we have been given the responsibility to set limits and boundaries for ourselves with others. To explore how we control and avoid ourselves, we search our personal histories. By exploring the powerlessness of our childhood and the unmanageability of our adult lives, we come to understand more about our personal heritage. Our denial of codependence fades, our acceptance increases, and we're better able to see our destructive adult behaviors. Is that God talking? Little feedback in there. So part of what I wanted to share just from my own history is it my first step. Of course, CODA was not around at the time. I'm a recovering alcoholic and addict, and so I was doing step work in my other 12-step program. But when I got to working on my codependence, it took me over a year to do my first step. So those of you that have talked about, like, how long does this take and what is the process like, you know, I think it is, Tammy, I think you were saying it's individual for everybody. It is absolutely individual for each person, and I wouldn't put a time limit on yourself. For me, it was more about taking that journey from my head to my heart with my first step. So there were areas that I could look at how I was powerless over different behaviors. we didn't have, of course, the patterns and characteristics weren't around at that time, and so there wasn't as much information during that, and most of it we got through therapy or the center that my husband was, you know, that Ken was working at the time. And what was the hardest part for me was the unmanageability. I had used my my codependent behaviors as the way to stay safe. I'd used it my whole life. You know, my ways that I looked at how I survived my trauma from my childhood became the way that I patterned the whole rest of my life to. So a little bit about my history with that is I'm the third youngest. I'm the youngest in my family, third girl. I'll just do brief little bit, but my father was a coach. He was also one of my main offenders. He had sexually abused me most of my childhood. My mother was rager, violent. And then my two older sisters, there was enough time in between us. There was a war in between. I think it was the Korean conflict. I was born after that. and so they were older than I was, so I didn't really have a whole heck of a lot of connection to them while I was growing up. And I became an escape artist. So part of how I survived being afraid of my mom, my oldest sister was also had rage issues and would become violent. How I survived my dad, my mom, my oldest sister was that I would hide in my closet. I'd hide under my bed. I'd sneak out my window. I would go run around the neighborhood. I would escape. And I did that as an adult, not only physically, because I was still a runner away if things got too tense, but I was an emotional escape artist as well. And part of how I did that, you know, looking at our patterns and characteristics is, one, for me, compliance, there's not one of those I did not identify with. So, you know, if I looked at my main category and those patterns and characteristics, compliance was definitely how I got through life. I tried to mold myself into being what I thought others wanted me to be. Acted different parts out, and of course, this is all going on in my little fantasy land up in my head. You know, I truly believe that codependents, you know, that we take whatever it is that we learned and how we learned it, because I think, you know, there could be, my experience listening to people, there could be five kids in a family, but each one has their little personality. So how we experienced our childhoods is going to be really unique. And that was really unique to me. It created my unique perceptions of life about myself, about men, women, life, marriage, family, working, just being a human being on this planet. It created all my perceptions around that. And so that was my computer programming, so to speak. So I had Windows 1953 in my head. And so that's all I could draw on. I didn't have anything else to draw on. So my whole life, you know, I medicated through drugs and alcohol. I medicated through an eating disorder, medicated through sex, medicated through being busy, playing sports. I could go on and on and on because I was such a good medicator and escape artist in that. And so I chose all these different ways. If it was going to numb out that sense of shame that I had that came out of my trauma, then I was going to medicate. So because of all of that, that created my particular way that I became codependent. So like I said, I became compliant in, you know, any and every area of my life. It didn't matter what it was, you know, whether it was in my marriages, because I've been married three different times, can be my last. And because of this recovery, we've been together over 38 years. Had it not been for codependence recovery, that would not have happened. Because I tried escaping that a number of times, and thank God I had a wonderful therapist who kind of kept bringing me back in my chair every time I wanted to leave. Also in the denial, you know, category for me, when I looked at that, it's like part of one of the biggest things for me, and that is that I denied my feelings. I altered my feelings. So I would cry my anger. If I had pain going on, I'd become afraid. I'd get anxiety that started happening. If I became afraid, I would either become fearless or numb, but I would suppress it all down, you know. So I didn't ever feel what it was I was really feeling at any given moment. If shame was going on, well, I would just get busy. Once I was in recovery from drugs and alcohol, then any of my other compulsions would sort of rear their head as a way to try to medicate that shame. It was an area that, oh gosh, okay, I'm going to rush through this a little bit more. We're trying to keep each other on track. But it was an area that for me, I also had to learn how to feel, because I believe that by feeling, I could heal. Once I really felt the true effects of my childhood and of how that childhood then morphed into my adult codependence, then I could heal it. I could see it. I could experience it. I could release it. And that could start that process for me. I learned that, you know, codependence is intergenerational, so there's nobody to blame. You know, it's a whole, for me, it's a whole lifetime of, you know, what got passed down from grandparents and great-grandparents to my parents and then to me. And then I also passed some of that down to my own kids in that. When I think of my first step, I think of that place where I just went into massive survival. And so I also needed to be able to have some compassion for myself, that I need to be accountable for how my codependence started showing up, that I also needed to be accountable to me to work on those childhood issues, those trauma issues that were the drivers behind my codependence. And as I did that, things got better. So I'm going to stop here and open it up for maybe two questions, depending on how long they are. And I can't remember who's going to be reciting the questions to me, but raise your hand in the chat box so that the questions can be seen.
I believe Leisha was going to be asking those questions. Do you have questions, Leisha?
I am asking them, but right now nobody has raised their hands. So have at it if anybody has any questions. Oh, wait, we have one. CE, can you unmute yourself and ask your question?
Oh, my God, I'm so nervous. This is probably the first quarter meeting I've been on, because I've just realized that I am massively codependent.
It's warm, warmish.
And I am starting to realize the traits that I have, my children have, and it's something that I really, really want to work on. So getting this email today, coming out of a toxic relationship very, very recently, almost feels like, you know, God's wrapping his arms around me and guiding me to where I need to be. My question is, how do you try and prevent these codependent things we have going to our children? And I know you say it goes to our children because it's passed down from generation to generation, but if I can help to eradicate or change my behaviours so that my children aren't presenting with these same things, I would be greatly appreciative.
you. Sure. Thank you so much. So I will share with you what was shared with me, because when I first started doing my work, I immediately saw everything I was doing wrong with my kids. And so because codependence is outer focus, I kept trying to get too focused in there. What was told to me is heal myself first. You know, there may be some tools that I could put into place, a different way of you know, communicating to my kids or being with my kids that I could start practicing, but I needed to heal me first before I was able to see clearly on how to be a different mom. And through the 12 steps, I became a different mom. It was like the process brought me there, you know, so there wasn't as much work at the end of the 12 steps as there was at the beginning on how to be there for my kids. I had to learn how to parent this little girl inside first before I knew how to parent my kids. So I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Mary. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
We have another question from Karen in the USA.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for your service. My question is, I'm been in recovery from my eating disorder in another 12-step program. And past 3 months, I've been in this program. And the mystery question is, on page 100 of the book, is actually how to find a sponsor. I know it'll come in God's time, but it just seems like it's so difficult to find a sponsor, someone who's walked with me, or even a co-traveler, or willing to do that with me. You guys started, so how'd you guys that work? Thank you, dear.
Thank you. So in the beginning, because it truly, you know, we were in AA, but CODA was not in existence, of course. It wasn't for a couple years, after we started our process. But so there was a part of our work that was done in therapy with our therapist, and also we had a few friends in recovery. We would go meet at a local coffee shop, those of us that were starting to work on some of these issues, and we would kind of have this group discussion in a sense. This was all before CODA started. So once CODA started, part of what we started doing was what was called co-sponsorship. So those of us, you know, because there wasn't any old timers, we were all the same age in program. But we would get together, two or three of us, to work on the steps and be able to share that with each other. You know, I had a woman that was my co, you know, we would co-sponsor each other and kind of walk ourselves through that. That was how we did it in the beginning, you know, before there was the availability really to, you know, have an individual sponsor. But it is, it's one thing that's been a challenge in CODA, because a lot of times people feel like, you know, part of their codependence has shown up in giving too much. And so then they, many times my experience anyways has been that it's, you know, the backing off of doing service in that way. But we, just the fact that we are here, we're experiencing program steps, there's some wisdom to give. So just an idea of maybe looking for a co-sponsor or putting it out there. I think you had put it out there in the chat room if anybody was interested. A lot of people do it cross-country, cross continents. So you can find a sponsor in any area.
This is true. Thank you, Mary. We
very
have
your service. Thank you.
We probably have about a dozen questions, but I'm thinking we need to move on, and then we'll take in order as we go to Q&A next.
Oh, we have time for one more.
One more question?
Okay. A short one?
Julie B.
Hi. Hi, Ken and Mary. This is your friend Julie B in Las Vegas. You remember me?
Of course. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I just want to quickly say thank you for your love and light. You know, thank God for God and thank God for you both. You've been role models in my recovery. This is my 20th year in CODA this month. And I can't believe it. So anyway, thank you. Couldn't have done it without you. My question is, listening to Ken and Mary throughout all the years, I write down notes from what they say. I remember Mary once said, obsession is a result of not working step one. I remember her saying that. And I remember Ken saying, after the honeymoon, my history shows up. So can you elaborate, Mary, on the obsession spiral? And then also, you were talking about feeling our feelings, and I believe that powerlessness is a feeling. So when I'm able to convert out of my obsession into powerlessness, then I'm working step one. Can you expound on that? Thank you.
Yeah, so part of what, for me, what I had when I was talking about that, it's so good to hear from you, Julie, is that because for me, the way that I experienced the effects of my trauma, so it kind of went in this domino effect. So first, this toxic shame gets created, which affects my self-esteem, self-worth, tells me that I'm bad, wrong, not enough, dumb, stupid. And then the next domino is that I then become afraid of that shame reoccurring in my life. So then I start getting into all my dysfunction. I'm going to control, I'm going to manage, I'm going to run away, get compliant, going to do all these things. So what I've experienced for myself with codependence is that it is for me is a fear addiction. And so that drives my obsessing. So if I can't, you know, shut the computer off, so to speak, and I'm starting to go down that rabbit hole into obsession, then that's a red flag for me that I'm in my codependence. And I need to take a step back. I need to, you know, look at my first step. It's like, okay, what am I powerless over? And how is this unmanageability looking at, showing up in my life? And just start going through the steps again. So that's what I was meaning by the obsessiveness with that, is that that's my personal little rabbit hole that happens when I'm afraid that I am going to experience shame, and then the pain of that shame, the loneliness of the shame, the guilt of the shame, the, you know, all the different feelings that then want to latch on to that shame when I go into, you know, we used to call them shame attacks, when I would go into a shame attack and be overwhelmed with it. So I hope that's helpful, and I think we're at time now to move on to step two. And my lovely husband will come up and present that. Thank you.
I'm the lovely husband, and I'm a grateful codependent. Oh, goodness. Sorry, I've got to arrange a couple things here. I wanted to read just a little excerpt from the CODA book on step two, and so bear with me for a moment. In step one, we recognized our failure in our own attempts to play God. We also allowed others to be our God. We recognized that we must seek help beyond ourselves and those to whom we've given authority. In doing so, we become ready to develop a belief in a power greater than ourselves, a power that can restore us to sanity and health. In step two, we begin establishing belief. For those of us who do not know a higher power, we embark on a new and wondrous relationship. For those of us who have a relationship with a higher power, this step can help us strengthen its weaker areas. I'm also recovering alcoholic and addict, and I don't know, probably seven other things on the list. But I was clean and sober for almost 8 years before CODA started. And I had been working in this field ever since within a few months after I got clean. And so I had worked the steps with my sponsor in AA, and I had a very interesting guy, a character for a sponsor. He was fairly gruff, and you know, he wouldn't mix his words. And when I'd say "I think," I mean, he'd do stuff like "I think," and he'd interrupt me, and he said, "Nobody cares what you think. Just sit down, shut up, and listen." And I'd be going, "Oh, I want to hit this guy bad." But he was exactly what I needed. I needed somebody who would practice tough love and get in my face, because I would react with anger. Anger was my primary feeling. And so I didn't do other feelings. If I was scared, I got angry. If I was in pain, I got angry. If I was feeling lonely or frustrated, I'd get angry. And so it's the only feeling I knew, and it was trained. That was part of my training as a child in my family system. So at one point, he basically said to me, "We're going to do a second step." I went to meet him for lunch, and out of nowhere, he said, "You're ready to do your second step?" And I said, "I am." And he said, "Well, yes, of course, because I told you are." And I was like, "Okay." So he basically, we had a conversation of how I viewed my higher power. And how I viewed my higher power was judgmental. I was disappointing to my higher power. My higher power could restore me to sanity, but I had done way too much to believe that my higher power would restore me to sanity. I believed that my higher power was judgmental, not available. My higher power was angry with me, disappointed with me, was critical, really didn't want much to do with me, and had given up on me. And so he said, "Okay, so that doesn't sound like a very good higher power." And I said, "Well, it doesn't, but it's all I know." And he said, "So if you had an opportunity to create your own higher power, what would that be?" I went down the list: loving, caring, understanding, present, available, always there, adored me, didn't judge me, would not abandon me in any way, shape, or form, would listen to me, would talk with me, would interact with me, communicate with me. And he looked at me and he said, "Done. There's your new higher power. I got to go." So he left the restaurant, and I was inside. I had just begun doing some experimental work with the therapist that I was working with. And you know, there wasn't a concept called inner child work. But because he saw that I kept dropping into this angry teenager and from time to time into this pained child, and he was a gestalt therapist, I would sit and role play and talk back and forth with this child. And so I heard this voice go, "Yay, can we really?" And it was like, I got delighted, got in the car, got about, probably 2 miles away. And I heard this voice, this little terrified voice, say, "If we go with this new God, this old God is really going to be pissed, and he's going to get us." And I shut it down, and I stayed stuck there for 7 years and didn't know it, didn't understand it, and didn't understand why. And most of all, for those 7 years, I stayed in some degree of hope that maybe my higher power will accept me. If I do good enough work, if I do a good enough job, if I act just right, all the things out of my childhood that I did to try to please my authority figures. And so when I started my, when I started my, because we, there was no CODA program. So we were both in therapy. We did about 2.5 years of his, hers, and ours therapy every week. And thank God we had this woman who, the therapist was a woman who had actually been through treatment at the treatment center that I was a program director for, clinical director for. And so she understood the concepts, the ideas, she understood the thoughts, she understood the spiritual principles involved in 12-step recovery, and she understood codependence because she had been treated for codependence. So we basically, part of our therapeutic process was to work to do the steps, but from a clinical base, you know, which really boiled down to the same basic process. But so I did my second, started to do my second step with her, and I shared with her my experience with my previous sponsor and my second step process. And and she said, take out a piece of paper. And I was like, you know, normally whenever she said something like that, everything, the alarms went off in my head, like, oh, shoot, something, this is big, whatever it is, I got to write it down. That means it's a big deal or whatever. So I took out a piece of paper and she said, tell me about the characteristics of some of the offenders, abusers, and your parents. So I started writing out angry, judgmental, critical, abusive, abandoning, neglecting, not available, not present, could never please, I was afraid of them. So rather than go into fear, I didn't do fear. So I was always angry. So then I was being judged for being something, something's wrong with me. Went through this whole thing. And she said, is that the higher power you shared? Are those the characteristics you shared with your sponsor 8 years ago? And I actually made the connection immediately. Wait a minute. What I had done is transferred all the characteristics of the authority figures and offenders of my childhood onto the number one authority of all, which was God, in my understanding. And I got it. I was able to make that connection that this had nothing to do with a loving higher power. This had everything to do with the gods of my childhood. And I had an internal power struggle for 8 years between the fears of the gods of my childhood and a loving higher power. And it was at that point I was able to make the transition, separate my feelings out about these offensive, judgmental, critical, angry people, and a number of other things that they had done that I had listed out and had been looking at in my first step, how I had become powerless and how my life had become unmanageable. And then I was able to rewrite what I truly wanted my higher power to be one more time, pretty much the same characteristics, but without the fear that this old God was somehow going to get me. And all of that was a childlike thinking, or what I call the magical thinking of a child, because my child operates in fear, which is pure fantasy. And my teenager operated in excitement, which is pure fantasy. It's the same feeling. And so when I was either in excitement fantasy or fear fantasy, I was having a difficult time connecting with my higher power, because now I'm living in a fantasy world in my head. And thank God, I have a higher power who, we talk a lot, we communicate a lot, and there's times that my higher power will say something along the lines of, well, go ahead if that's what you want to do. I hope it doesn't hurt too much, but I'm still here. And it's like, okay, when I hear that kind of statement, it's like, okay, I better pay attention, because my higher power is trying to care for me in ways that no one did when I grew up. And so, transference was the number one issue here for me. And so what I find helpful, and I share this a lot with others, is to make a list of the characteristics of the authority figures from your childhood. One word, characteristics. And then ask yourself, how many of those characteristics do you also apply to your higher power? probably one of the most difficult ones I had to deal with in relationship to my relationship with my higher power was that I really had a hard time for quite a couple of years getting past the fact that I was somehow going to do something wrong and disappoint God. Like I had the power to disappoint God, is what a friend of mine finally said. Well, what if God gets angry at me? What are you like? He said, Ken, if you have the power to anger God, then you better find a new God because you have power to affect God's well-being. And a higher power in his world, a higher power, we have no power to affect a higher power. And so my higher power today is a very loving, beautiful, amazing, I don't even want to say being, but consciousness. And I believe that codependence is a fear and shame based disease. And that I believe today that there are only two consciousnesses, faith and fear. Or love and fear. And that fear isn't even real. Fear is always a story that I'm making up in my head about how bad it's going to be in the next moment, the next minute, the next hour, the next day. And then I scare myself about how bad that's going to be. And I end up having a miserable day over a fantasy I made up in my head about how bad it's going to be. And that's all fear really is. That is until I intervene on the fantasy and go, no, wait, we're having an amazing day. We don't know. I need to turn my situation tomorrow over the care of God as I understand today and trust the outcome to God and enjoy my time today. And I had fears kick up this morning. I've been doing this, we've both been doing this for the entire length of CODA, 30 some years. And I've been doing this for almost 44 years. And I still get fear kick in just before we start to share in an event like this. And it was like, no, it's okay. Everything's all right. and then I have this kind of twisted teenager from time to time. He says, yeah, as long as we don't make any mistakes, it's like, no, back off and be quiet. Hey, just back off. I got this. And so I could choose faith or fear. And in any given moment, I have the opportunity to choose faith or fear, or fear and love, because my higher power is all about love, and I believe it's the only real power in the universe. And love is the power that actually has saved my life twice. And I don't know if I have a third time, but I really do not want to find out. And that my higher power is the source of that love, the goodness, the well-being, the blessings, the goodness, the health, happiness, well-being, my continued recovery is all about my higher power. And so I look at the second step as the step of belief, and that I had believed in a very sick, demented, twisted higher power for the early part of my recovery and in the AA recovery until I started working on it in CODA. And today my higher power is amazing. I see so many faces here. And I see my higher power in every single one. My higher power is not separate. There's no way my higher power is separate from me or me from my higher power. I may get distracted and go away because I'm whatever, I have things I have to do or take care of or whatever. But I always find my way back to my higher power. And today, I use conversation from my higher power a lot, which I will actually talk about later in the 11th step. But we have about 5 minutes or so, I believe. 10 minutes. If you have any questions. Okay.
The first one's a verbal one from Raquel. If she can unmute and ask her question.
Raquel?
Yes, hi, this is Raquel. Thank you so much for taking my call and for your time. I wanted to ask you, I know that Mary earlier was talking about how codependency, it's a generational disease, so there's nobody to blame. So you can't there's no need to blame anybody, right? Can you share? So, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so based on that truth, can you share a little bit more about your experience, strength, and hope as far as your relationship with your parents at the beginning of your recovery, mm-hmm. early on, and then progressively? Like, what can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, how that you know, worked out for you, please.
Yes, and I will try to keep it simple.
Thank you.
When I first started working on this and doing a first step, the first step for me was I wrote out at length all of the emotional, physical, sexual, intellectual, and spiritual abuses, abandonments, enmeshments, and neglects that I could remember that I went through and that I experienced. And at first, huge feelings came, anger, and all those feelings that I've been using anger to cover up, because right underneath it was the shame and the pain and the loneliness and the outrage. And it wasn't just my parents. It was with authority figures, because my anger got me thrown in and out of 8 schools. And so I had authority figures in military school that were intensely abusive. And so at first I wanted to blame them. But I realized that as I'm blaming them, I'm literally leaking my energy out to them. And I'm giving up my power away to them. I'm playing victim. And I believe today that there are no victims as adults. That we might be victimized, but if how I choose to respond as an adult is I can respond as a victim or an empowered man and a loving man with strength. Children are the only victims in this world. They don't have a choice. We do as adults. And so when I gave up blame, I really began to heal. So I mean, I had to begin to be conscious of what I'm blaming, because when I'm blaming, I'm in victim. When I'm in victim, I'm angry. People ask me about victim consciousness, and I say, well, adult victims are about as much a victim as an angry rattlesnake. We might be quiet for a while, but pretty soon the anger is going to come out somewhere. And as a victim, I would take that angry energy and turn it in on myself. Or I would come out the side of my neck at somebody else. And so as a victim, I would blame, because I needed to blame somebody else as to why I felt this way. When the fact is, I felt this way. They were my feelings. And I had to learn how to deal with those feelings. Was that helpful?
Thank you, Ken. That's great. We have
Thank
another
you.
Question from Jennifer from Vancouver.
Okay. Jennifer?
Are you able to unmute yourself, Jennifer? Here, I have you unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry, I couldn't find my picture there. Oh, there I am. All right. I was lucky to have had some Gestalt therapy when I was young and leaving home at 18 for all these family reasons. So I know about that. I never got married because of all these, either I found the wrong people or I was afraid of the right people. But anyways, how far would you carry this higher power? What a big question, into the COVID situation. So here's the situation. We either live in fear and love. So I have some friends at Heavenly Worship that say, if you have any fear about COVID and you can't come here, then, you know, you're not putting all your faith in God. And, you know, I can play keyboard there and I love being on the worship band, but I was thinking to myself, would a loving God want to put you in a situation, like my cousin that passed away of COVID, someone else I know has? So that's a tough question, I know, for everyone, but how far do you take love versus fear? Or is sometimes fear a good thing, telling you not to do something? Woo!
Yeah. that may take a little while, but I'll try to keep it very simple.
Okay,
very quick.
Yes. Me too. Yeah, fear, I try to keep it simple.
Fear is a lie. Okay. It's always a lie. It's the lie I tell myself about how bad it's going to be.
Okay.
So, and love could be interpreted, 20 different ways. Do I have faith in my higher power? Yes. Is there a higher spiritual reason behind COVID? I truly believe it with all my heart. I don't know what that is yet, and it hasn't been fully revealed to me, but I do get consistently there is a much greater purpose far beyond what I can even begin to comprehend as to why COVID is happening right now. So do I respect the power of fire? Yes. Does that mean I'm going to go put my hand in fire? No. Do I love fire? Yes. But I'm not going to put my hand in the fire because the wisdom of my heart will tell me not to. So what I would suggest to anybody, because people have asked me, both clients and recovery friends, I recommend that you take 2 or 3 breaths, but move your consciousness in that last breath from your head to your heart and ask your heart, what's the answer? Because your heart knows the truth. It will never, ever lie to us, ever. My head will rationalize murder, but my heart won't lie. So trust your heart.
Thank you, Ken. That was wonderful.
And do what's right for you. So
Maybe watch it on Facebook once in a while.
And if others, again, if I give my power away to others and what they might think about my decision,
right,
I'm in my codependence.
Thank you very much, Ken.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome.
My cousin and her husband started CODA in Canada here. Janet and Brian Long, yeah. So thank you.
Question from Carol A. She just said, hi. I wanted to ask the hosts what might have caused my codependency because I feel I had a very loving childhood and my parents were very good to me. Carol A. from Canada.
Well, it's always about degrees. And then we've got to close after that, but it's always about degrees. Because codependence is a feelings disease, like all addiction, all compulsive dependent behavior. It's the only reason we act codependently is we try to medicate feelings. And so I didn't have parents who taught me that there were 7 primary feelings, that here's how you express them, that you can express them in mature and healthy ways, that they would be available to listen if I was angry at them. I had authority figures who said, oh, you're going to cry? Well, I'll give you something to cry about. Basically, one of the simplest ways I was mistreated as a child, and I think most of us may relate to some degree, is emotional neglect. They neglected to teach me how to be empowered, how to stand up for my feelings. They neglected to teach me how to talk about my feelings and to respect my feelings, because my feelings will never lie to me. They are the language of my heart, not my head. But we're taught to look good in our societies, and that's the most critical thing. And so for me, just emotional neglect set me up for codependent behaviors. So that's a very loaded question. And I'd love to explore it more, but we're running short on some time here, and Mary's going to take some time to pursue step 3. And I appreciate you all for listening. I wish we could take a day just to do questions and answers, I think. So here's Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. I love hearing all the questions that come up. They are, and I like, in meetings, we're answering the questions here, but there's so much wisdom in CODA, in CODA's membership, and it's just, really inspiring to me. So step 3 In this step, we continue to develop and strengthen our relationship with God. Through our work with steps 1 and 2, we realize that our control and avoidances no longer work and that others are no longer responsible for our happiness and well-being. We realize how our playing God or giving the power of God to others is short-lived, painful, and ultimately self-destructive. We gain a better or new understanding of a power greater than ourselves. Until we turn our emotional attention to God, we are still bound by our codependent thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. We remember that we are asked only to make a decision. We are not asked to instantly experience total faith and trust in God. Our ability to trust in healthy ways has more than likely been negatively affected by the codependence in our lives. We cannot expect to make a decision without some reservation and fear. To cope with our fears, we ask God for courage and strength. We seek the support and understanding of our sponsors and recovery friends. Some of us may even create a special time and place to complete this step. We may experience circumstances when we think God cannot or will not help. We may revert to our former codependent survival patterns. If we look closely, we find that fear, shame, or fear of shame are at work once again. We can walk a path towards serenity again by praying for God's help and guidance, talking with our sponsors and recovery friends, and reviewing the first 3 steps. Day by day, we strengthen our relationship with God. We become more responsible for our recovery by placing this relationship first. Every day, we find it helpful to renew our decision and to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. The third step for me, I think, once I got past my own denial and delusions and protections and all of that around my first step, that third step for me of putting that into action, because I think it is very much an action step, because we made a decision, so we're you know, beginning to, for me, it was that place of beginning to change my way of how I was going to approach my life. You know, I was going to be putting my higher power first in my life. If I got into like my compulsiveness around my own fear and fear of what you were going to say or do, or, you know, how I was going to look and, you know, am I going to say this wrong? Putting my higher power first was a huge step for me, because then I couldn't do all those other things. You know, they were right in my face, which brought me back to, you know, my powerlessness and unmanageability in there. Also brought me back into that place that Kim was talking about in the second step. It's like, who is my higher power? You know, and so I felt like, you know, for many years, there was sort of this dance of doing this 2 steps forward, then I was going to take it all back, and then I was going to, you know, turn my life over to God, then I would take parts of it back. And so we did this dance constantly. And I'm very grateful that, for me anyways, that I'm very grateful that my higher power had such compassion and patience and love for me that I was never alone during any of that. That I truly believe, through my work today, I truly believe that as I was going through the trauma that I went through in my childhood, that my higher power was there protecting that little soul inside. And that I was never alone then and kept me intact, so to speak. Even if I went down all these dysfunctional ways to stay intact, kept me intact until I was able to start working on these issues. So I when I was working step 3 to begin with. I, you know, realized that there was a part of me and I had to do this, but made like this intellectual decision. And over time, you know, because I had to start somewhere, so it had to be a place where, okay, I'm going to make this decision right now. What does this look like in my life? I would struggle with it daily. And like I said, I would keep taking things back. But I had to start there to be able to start changing my thoughts. You know, I have been taught in recovery that our thoughts create our feelings, and then our thoughts and feelings determine our behaviors. And so if my behaviors, you know, coming to CODA were codependent, I needed to go back and really start working with how I view things, how I saw things, how I perceive things, and in this case, how what that meant for me to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood God. I had a lot of skewed ideas of what God was. Ken talked a little bit about that transference. You know, so when I first got clean and sober and I was working the third step in that program, on a subconscious level, and it's like it just stayed there for a while until I started working on my codependence. I didn't even realize I was here. But I stayed in that intellectual place, but this kind of like this kid inside of me or this teenager, probably a mixture of all that, would come up and say, you know, because of the transference, and for me, my higher power was a little bit of my mom, a little bit of my dad. I was raised by coaches, a little bit of my coaches. My higher power were their personalities, you know. So when I thought of, you know, turning my will, my life over to the care of God, it's like, screw that. That's what I drank and used over. You know, I'm not going to be doing that to, you know, because my higher power at that point on a subconscious level was one that, you know, didn't care about me, was going to abuse me, was going to hurt me somehow, didn't really want to listen to me. So I had to, while I was doing this step, I had to be mindful of my second step. I had to be mindful of my first step. It's like, what did I bring into this relationship? You know, and how did that change things? And so that intellectual head process that I went through on making a decision made this slow travel down to my heart. And then it became a heartfelt decision. It's like, I don't want to be in charge anymore. You know, I'm willing to trust that my higher power loves me. I'm willing to trust that God cares about me and wholly and completely and wants the best for me and wants to listen to me. I'm willing to trust all those different parts to the best of my ability on any given day. But that would be my prayer, you know, the serenity prayer. I said over and over and over, I think serenity prayer is a wonderful prayer for codependence, you know. And so I started through this seeing more and more all this conflict in God's that I had. You know, I had made fear my higher power. I had made shame at times my higher power. I had made Ken my higher power, my children my higher power. I had made my job. You know, I made all these different, you know, feelings and people and situations my higher power that I had to continuously deal with that conflict in God's. Again, that brought me again back to my second step, back to my first step. And so I had to be mindful of all of that as that was going on. And it made a huge difference for me doing that. So part of what, for me, you know, just some examples of what happened is, you know, I had shared, you know, when I was talking about my first step that there was a lot of ways that I would mask my feelings, you know. And so one of those is because there was so much rage and violence in my family, I didn't do anger, you know. And so unless it just built up so much, it would squirt out the side of my neck like Kim was talking.
but in do anger. And so part of what happened for me is I had to, you know, start, you know, and I started this with Ken. Hold on just for a moment. There we go. Video is back on. Part of what that looked like for me just with anger, it was like, okay, I need, say Ken did something that I felt angry about. You know, I need to go up to him and share, Ken, when you said this, I felt angry. And I needed to let go of any expectations of outcome, because I realized expectations were also of God. They were my little fantasy that I was creating. So I needed to let go of any expectations of outcome, trust the outcome to God. My job was to show up, be clear, clean, healthy in my communication, not color it up, defend myself, rationalize my feelings, why I'm angry, describe all the different things, all that kind of stuff. I needed just be simple, clear, clean in my communication, and then let go of the outcome, let go of any expectations, and trust God that I was showing up and doing what I needed to do, and that was a part of me putting that decision into action. And so there were many of those, of course, as going through some of the healthy behaviors, you know, and the changes that codependence recovery brought. There were so many examples of that. So it is an ongoing process, because any given day, there's something I want to take back. There's something that maybe my heart hurts about, and I want to be able to somehow fix that in another person, or I see a, you know, somebody that I care about who's suffering. I want to have the right words, all of that, and as opposed to just holding space, just loving that person and letting go of the outcome of that. You know, recovery for me is not one of perfectionism. You know, I think perfectionism is part of our codependence. You know, and experiencing my humanness, and that, you know, I'm going to do those 2 steps forward, 1 back, or maybe 5 steps forward and 2 back, or however that shows up. But that I'll never arrive. I don't think any of us do. You know, I think it's an ongoing evolution, and we get stronger and stronger, and it becomes less powerful in our lives as we move through it. So I want to open up. I think we're about time for questions. And so I wanted to open up for any questions that some of you might have on the third step.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Raina. I used to live in Tucson, so I loved seeing this email. I'm in Florida. My question is this, regarding anger. I actually took a test. It's a cognitive emotional test. So my score on anger was 0, which means that I don't recognize anger as a feeling. So it's impossible to share it with anybody who makes me angry if I don't recognize it to myself. From what this test concluded is that when we suppress anger, we automatically bring it against us, because it has to go somewhere. So it's a self-damaging energy that can lead to physical diseases such as chronic degenerative diseases or autoimmune diseases or something like that. My question is, how do you recognize anger if you don't recognize anger?
Okay, so I'll answer this the best that I can, because not knowing, you know, all I can do is share from how this showed up for me. So the first part for me was in recognizing the difference for me between assertive anger and rageful anger. And so assertive anger is that I had the strength and empowerment within to fight for myself, to stand up for myself, to share my feelings, all of that, but there was no shame, blame, judgment, criticism, analyzing of anybody else or any other situation to have my truth. So I could share my truth cleanly. And so I had to learn, you know, how to be assertive in that and to separate that out from rageful anger. And what I learned about rageful anger is that it's actually four feelings. It's anger, it's fear, it's shame, and it's pain, kind of this crazy cocktail that mixes together, and that I could either do it passively or I could do it aggressively. So with that being said, just to be able to differentiate for myself on those, one of the exercises that somebody had given to me was I had to keep a little 3x5, you know, those little tiny notebooks with me all the time so I could have it with me in my purse wherever I was at. And for a week, I had to write down all the times I was irritated, all the times I was annoyed, all the times I was frustrated, all the times I was judging somebody in my head, being critical, upset, all these different ways that anger and rageful anger showed up. And I had to write that down for a week every single time that I recognized any of those things. And after a week's time, it was like, man, I'm an angry person. It's like, good grief. I have a lot of anger going on. But I didn't realize it because I would disguise it in different words. You know, I would disguise it in my negative self-talk. You know, I'd take that rage and you know, turn it inwardly and tell myself how dumb and stupid I am, or you're never going to get this right, or what's wrong with you. I would, you know, rage inwardly at myself. And so that helped. That was just something that helped me. It was those two things. One, being able to tell the difference between the different ways that anger can show up. Another thing that somebody had shared with me is when I'm in my assertive anger, if I looked at emotions from like 1 to 10 and 10 being the most intense an emotion can show up, anything over about a 3 or 4 is reaction. And anything between that 1 and 3 and 4 is about responding. So my assertiveness would show up in responding. My reactiveness would show up more in that passive or aggressive rage anger in there. And that also helped me because, again, I would cry my anger. And so if I had intense tears coming out, that was a good indication I was probably angry too. So anger became my friend. It gave me the strength and empowerment to be able to take care of myself and share my truth in that. So I hope that's helpful.
Great. Thank you so much, Mary. We have a ton of other questions. One from Ash, A-S-H. Can you unmute and ask? Ash, are you there? Okay, let's move on to Irene. Irene, can you unmute?
Hi. Hi, everyone. Hi, Alicia. Thank you for your service. Thanks, Arizona. Hi, Mary. Lovely to see you again. Hi. I'm in Liverpool. And God bless you. And I'm so, so grateful. So grateful to God to bring me to CODA. But my journey started in AA as well, and it was a foundation of recovery of looking at me. However, I've been 3 years in CODA now, still searching for a sponsor, and realize really there's a conflict here. And I'm just wondering how you married the two steps works, because my sponsor in AA doesn't really recognize CODA, and it becomes problematic, because for me this is the core of my problems, always has been, always will be, and I'm just having a really difficult time I'm having therapy as well, which is really, really helpful. And my therapist actually recommends that, you know, because I've got the conflict going on, to just go with my gut I'm trying to listen with my heart, and it's just, it's really hard, I have to say, but I am handing it over to God. But I'm just wondering, what was your experience, if you don't mind my asking? And, you know, any help from anybody else will be really appreciated. Thank you. I'll leave it there. God bless. Thanks.
Thank you, Irene. It's good to see you again, too. So when, you know, of course, this, again, I'm going to talk a little bit about a period of time before CODA started and then a little bit after, because once it was there. So the way I kind of interpreted things in my in Alcoholics Anonymous was when they would talk about the ism of the disease, the emotional sobriety, those were all. We have some music going on.
I'm going to mute all, and then Mary, you're going to have to stay.
Okay. Am I?
Mary, you're muted.
The music is back. Okay.
Close.
Maybe I'm not supposed to answer this one.
Who is the Zoom bomber? Please remove.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so brief, I'll try to get through this quickly. But so, you know, how I kind of married that, you know, for a period of time before CODA started was looking at, you know, that in talking in AA, that it was the ism part of our disease that had to do with the emotional sobriety, those pieces. So I, you know, when I went to my meetings, I would share from that place, in a sense, you know, that I was dealing with the ism part of my disease when I was in AA. What happened is, you know, I realized, you know, Ken and I both realized, you know, AA isn't there to deal with our codependence. It's there to keep us clean and sober, you know. So I love AA, still go to AA, forever grateful to AA. All of that, you know, and so when moving then into, you know, starting CODA and CODA, we lost many friends in AA because of starting CODA. And, unfortunately, and, you know, what I make up about that is it was just, maybe too scary, you know, to be dealing with those issues. I don't know. I can't speak for any of the people that reacted to it, but, I have come to believe and know for myself that codependence is at the root of all my addictions. It started first. It's what morphed me, shaped me. It's why I used all those. It's why I used all those medicators in order to, you know, medicate the feelings around my codependence. And so I know there's a lot of people in other programs that don't see it. And again, what they think is none of my business. I just try to have some compassion for that, and that, you know, we just see it in different ways, kind of like politics, we see it in different ways, and let it go with that. But it's not an unusual thing. So I don't know if that's helpful, but, you know, that's what a little bit of what I experienced in that. And I think we are about at time.
Okay.
Or we're at break time. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.